From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Let's be honest. We can't be shocked that there's a lot of data about us on the web, that Facebook and Google are gold mines of intimate personal info. But changes in both are highlighting privacy issues in the web's evolution, Facebook's timeline, Google's new privacy policy, which gets you from every angle. Naked. This hour on Point, Google, Facebook, and your privacy now. You can join the conversation. Are you up on the changes coming at Google, Facebook? Are you ready for this? Happy for the convenience? Wondering about your privacy? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. We'll hear in this hour from web guru Jeff Jarvis and privacy guru Mark Rotenberg. But joining us first from New York is super guru Stephen Levy, senior writer for Wired magazine. He's got the goods on what's happening privacy-wise from Google to Facebook and beyond, author of In the Plex, How Google Thinks, Works, and Shapes Our Lives, and Crypto. Stephen Levy, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Thank you. Thanks for the guru status. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, it's very high indeed. Look, there's no secret about this. Google's talking about it all over the place. Many of us have seen, you know, messages from them flash across our screen saying we've got a big new privacy policy coming. But you know how that goes, Stephen. I mean, what, 1 in 100 people who really dig down in there to see what's happening. What is, we'll start with Google. What are they doing?
So, as you mentioned, Google has a lot of information about us. Google has a lot of different products. It started out with just search, of course, which gets a lot of really valuable information about people. When you go to the search engine, you're really telling Google, you know, what you're thinking about, what your interests are, what you want to do. And, you know, a lot of secrets come out there.
Sure.
In addition to that, all the other products it has, traditionally, it's kept those products siloed, and they had different privacy policies for a lot of them. A couple of years ago, they did change their privacy policy with less fanfare than we're seeing today to put some of them together. But what they're doing now is they're saying, look, we just want one big privacy policy, because what we really want to do is bring all the things to Google together, and it'll all be one big Google. And we could then use information in different products, use it together, ostensibly, they say, to serve their users better and to serve better ads to their users.
So that means across every product you use, Google product, they'll be watching every click, everything you type in, every place you are, because this includes, I mean, Android smartphones, which have very often they're tracking where you are. News readers, digital wallets, what you spend on everything, they're putting into one hopper and sort of thinking, I guess that's one way to put it, but they'll put their formulas to work on what's going on with you, where you are, what you're doing, what you might need next.
Right. Well, the key to remember is they're not getting any more information with this change than they already had. They're just saying that it's going to benefit the users, they say. And obviously, if the users are happy, then Google's happy. It makes more money by being able to do this. And some of the examples they give is if they know you're a vegan and you're searching for a restaurant, they know from your location that you're in New York City, and they won't show you barbecue restaurants.
Okay, because you're not going to be eating barbecue, you're a vegan, but it really gets right into your sort of daily life here when you triangulate off of all the information sources they have. I mean, one of the things they're kind of bragging about it is you've got a meeting on your calendar. You haven't mentioned, you might have made this, written it down months ago. Now you're driving, you're on your way to your meeting, and suddenly you hear from Google. What might they tell you?
They might say, you know what, we know the traffic is really busy on Route 101, you know, where you are now. You're headed to your meeting. Your meeting is at noon, and, you know, you're not going to make it. They're going to give you an alert.
So, I mean, even in real time, they're going to know what you've planned, where you're headed, who you're meeting with, where that meeting is, where you are now. And even without you asking, they're going to sort of say, hello, here's some information you might need. I've got a little tape here from Google as they announced their proposed new privacy policy. They released this ad to help users understand what the change might be. Puts a, you know, beautiful spin on it.
The new policy reflects our efforts to create one beautifully simple experience. It means that if you're signed in, We'll treat you as a single user across all of our products, combining information you've provided from one service with information from the others, so you have a better, more intuitive experience from the moment you sign in to the second you log out, whether you're sending mail, making meetings, watching videos, or searching. Over time, it'll mean better Google search results and ads. It can mean more accurate spelling suggestions because you've typed a word before. And it may even mean we'll be able to tell you when you'll be late for a meeting, based on your location, your calendar, and local traffic conditions.
Google describing some of the uses that they'll put their information to under their new privacy policy. Some people applauding this, saying, great. On the other hand, you've got Gizmodo's Matt Honan wrote a post titled, It's Official, Google is Evil Now. Of course, their thing was, don't be evil.
Right. Yeah, yeah. When I did my book, I really got into that, whether they regret being so upfront
signing off evil.
About that being their motto. They put it in their prospectus for the IPO. I'll be curious to see what the Facebook IPO looks like, whether that has that something like that in it too. But they when I was doing the book, and this about a year ago, when I stopped asking them this question, they were still okay with it. They said, we still think it was a useful thing. But every time they do something, people bludgeon them saying, oh, yeah, Mr. Don't Be Evil. How about this? How about that?
Well, I mean, we're just asking today. Maybe it'll be a paradigm of great convenience. And it is not data that they don't have already somewhere in their empire, but it will all be sewn together. It will flow across all these boundaries. They'll put it all together to think about us, to serve us up to advertisers, to serve information to us. I'm reading here, Stephen Levy, this is from your colleague Tim Carmody at Wired, and he wrote this. He said, I don't think Google is evil, at least in the sense that Google and we thought of evil in the tech industry a decade ago. And then he wrote, I think it's becoming something else, something more than a little uncanny, something that despite conjecture, projections, fictions, and a combination of excitement and foreboding, we haven't fully prepared ourselves to recognize yet. It does seem to me, Stephen, that when you just feel the bulk of all this data being so in such a sophisticated manner, sliced and diced and turned around to serve us and to watch us, these things are morphing into something bigger than we imagined, or most of us anyway, a decade and more ago.
You know, I think the people at Google would take that as a great compliment. What they want to do is come up with something that might feel weird at first, but they hope we'll accept it as part of our lives, just as finding an amazing search, engine was, a revelation to us in 1998, and we take it for granted now when we, are experienced critics, and say, what, they didn't find this incredibly obscure piece of information? What's the matter with Google? Whereas once, even finding anything would have taken a lot of huge effort there. Google's future, they see something, talk about something on campus called zero query search, where they really give us search results before we even type about it, before we.
So they know what you're wondering at that moment.
Yeah, they think, well, you're probably going to ask for this search query soon. Let's give you the result now.
That's pretty wild. I mean, I'm reading here in the Washington Post, Jeffrey Chester's quote. He's at the Center for Digital Democracy. He says, there's no way a user can comprehend the implication of Google collecting across platforms for information about your health, political opinions, financial concerns. Yes, they've had the data, but in some ways we're new territory just on how sophisticated. Then we come to Facebook. And, of course, they got their big IPO coming. They're going to be worth $100 billion or something is the valuation that may be on it. And they have recently introduced this thing called Timeline. A lot of Facebook users have signed up for it already. Others may not have. Others aren't even on Facebook. Can you explain what the change there is, Stephen?
Yeah, it's interesting. Facebook doesn't need that kind of change to the privacy policy because everything in Facebook is already mushed together there. And what they want to do is, get even more information by putting all your information in this sort of like auto-generating autobiography called Timeline. It's sort of like this master scrapbook that includes not only the stuff that you post to Facebook and stuff that, pictures of you that your friends might post to Facebook, but also they've invited outside software developers, application developers, to create applications that generate more data about you that automatically goes into the timeline. For instance, there's this thing called the Washington Post Social Reader, and all the articles you read in the Washington Post using this application get posted to your timeline. So your timeline includes the articles you read. It includes the music you listen to on services like Spotify or RDO or Moog. And, the your exercise runs. There's an app for that. And there's an app for all sorts of things. The default is that they're going to report that to your timeline. So the idea is that this would be, you know, all the information about you collected in one place where presumably you can control who sees it. But of course, it's sort of complicated to say, well, you know, this group of friends can see this and I don't want my mom to see that.
Right.
So a lot of people just wind up just leaving it sit there.
And the big change, of course.
And the next week, this is going to be imposed on all of us. Whether you like it or not, you're going to get a timeline.
Everything you've ever put up on Facebook, very easily accessible. You can just click on the year you want to look at, the month you want to look at, the date you want to look at, and very likely you'll be able to see what that person
Your life is now a Ken's Burn documentary.
Right, right. Anybody can look anywhere. It used to be there was a kind of privacy here, Stephen, just in the great mountain of stuff. It was just a hassle to go back years and look at those old beer pong photos from 2003. It's not hard now. It's, in fact, it's dead easy.
Right. And, you know, and Facebook thinks that people are going to love this. Facebook's, you know, a story time and again, and this is the lesson I think they've extracted from it, is when they push us to share more, at first we push back, but then as it happens in a few times, not all times, they had a sort of a debacle with one of the advertising things where they tried to make people share too much. But in some other things like the news feed, which are now very popular on Facebook, you know, people have come to accept it. And they think timeline is going to be one of these things that some people might balk at first, but later they'll realize that they get a benefit from sharing with the world.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Google and Facebook and your privacy. The rules are changing. They say it's great for you. Maybe it is. What do you think? Is it? And what about Facebook's timeline, putting your whole life easily accessible day by day right out there for all your quote-unquote friends? Say you don't want to do it? Well, maybe you can get in there and do something about it. Here's a little takeoff in 2010 from the Comedy Central show South Park, taking a jab at Facebook in the fourth season episode, You Have Zero Friends. Things go drastically wrong when the character Stan Marsh, voiced here by Trey Parker, tries to log out from Facebook for good, but to no avail.
Edit profile. Update profile. There! Delete profile! You have requested to delete your Facebook profile. If this is an error, hit cancel. Proceed. Delete your profile. Are you sure? Yes, no. Yes! Are you totally sure? Yes!
I'm afraid I can't let you do that, Stan Marsh.
Can't let me do that? What are you talking about?
The voice of Facebook. I'm afraid I can't let you do that, Stan Marsh, on South Park there. Stephen Levy is with us this hour, senior writer with Wired magazine, author of In the Plex, How Google Thinks, Works, and Shapes Our Lives. We're going to hear in just a moment from big web guru Jeff Jarvis. But with us right now from Washington is Mark Rotenberg, executive director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center, teaches information privacy law at Georgetown University Law Center. His group has raised some big concerns about the new policy. Mark, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm fine. Look, a lot of Google people are just clicking the little button that says, you know, okay, fine, whatever, and on it will go. What are you concerned about, Mark?
Well, I think there's a real problem here. I mean, I need to say, first of all, this hasn't happened yet. Google is proposing to make these changes on March 1st. And people need to keep this in mind because there's actually a lot of resistance to what Google's proposing to do. This is clearly not about simplifying privacy policies for users. This is about Google claiming the ability to combine data that users have given to the company for different services and for different purposes, bring it all together so that Google can, you know, do more advertising and more profiling of users. And I think people have every right to feel that that's not fair. But what's more interesting still for my organization, Epic, is that when Google tried to do this almost 2 years ago with the introduction of Google Buzz, they took the email data from Gmail users and said, you know, now you're a part of a Google Buzz network that nobody had signed up for.
Mm-hmm.
We filed a complaint at the Federal Trade Commission, very extensive complaint, actually. The FTC undertook an investigation, and they, as a result of that investigation, forced Google to sign a consent order, which, among other things, said, you can't do this again. You can't take user data that they've provided for one purpose and use it for a different purpose without actually getting their permission. So I'm going to say something that I imagine is going to surprise some of your listeners.
Okay.
It is our view. I think what Google's doing is actually illegal. I think it violates the consent order that they entered into with the Federal Trade Commission. I don't think they should be allowed to do this. And in a related development, Google actually backed off last week a plan to do this with the services that it provides to the federal government, because the federal government looked at what Google was proposing and said, that's ridiculous. You can't take our federal agency email and drop it into your other services. That would violate all the privacy expectations of people who work in the federal government.
But that's exactly what they're going to do with the private...
Well, they're not going to do it now with government services.
But with private users across the country, I mean, are you really suggesting... Google's putting out just mountains of data saying, hey, here it's coming, it's happening, it's going to happen. You know, you can deal with it or lose the services. There's no implication in what they send to users that this thing might not happen. Are you serious that it might not happen?
I'm very serious about this. It has already happened with federal agencies because last week here in Washington, the General Services Administration basically said to Google, forget it. You're not going to do this with the federal agencies, and Google backed off. So, you know, we think it's very much an open question right now. Now, I know oftentimes on privacy issues, people expect to hear, oh, this is going to happen. We have to get used to it. We're about to lose our privacy, more of the same. I think this may turn out very differently. And as Stephen knows, actually, Facebook has gone through this itself. I mean, this was Facebook's experience with Beacon, for example. You know, Facebook said, we got this great idea for advertising and promotion. We're going to, you know, put out all the stuff that you're interested in buying and put your photo on it. And people said, that's ridiculous.
But maybe Mark, maybe with respect, because I care a lot about privacy, but maybe I just have an outdated notion of what privacy is. I mean, you say they're going to use it for advertising and profiling. Well, heck, that's what the web has become, isn't it?
Well, let's be clear on this point. I completely respect Internet users who want to disclose a lot of their personal information. That should be their choice. Jeff is going to come on in a few minutes, and he's going to talk about the fact that he likes to disclose a lot of personal information.
Many do.
Mm-hmm. Other people might choose to disclose not so much information. I think that should be respected, too. But I think the key point in this discussion is that it has to be the users who make the decision. It can't be Google and Facebook taking away from the users the right of the users to decide for themselves.
But Google gives you a choice. They say, if you don't want to do this, you can sign off of all Google products. Get out of here.
Well, yeah, you can unplug your computer, too. But I think that's kind of missing the point here. In other words, if someone has signed up for an email service that they like Gmail, and they understand the terms of service, and they're okay with that, and Google comes along afterwards and says, oh, guess what? Now we've decided to take all your personal information from email, and we're going to drop it into another service because that's good for us. That can't be right.
Mark Ruttenberg with the Electronic Privacy Information Center. Please stand by in Washington. Stephen Levy in New York. In just a second, we're going to go to Jeff Jarvis. He's got a big view on this. A few of our listeners first. Travis in Nashville, Tennessee. Travis, you are on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I'm a big fan of the show.
Great.
I'm a 23-year-old student and been using the Internet, I guess, for almost the majority of my life.
Yep.
And I'm a big fan of what Google's doing. I think being better served ads would be pretty convenient. You get information about products you may not have heard of before. And I think choice is a big part of it. And there are numerous extensions and plugins that users can use to block ads. You don't have to be signed in to other services.
So it doesn't bother you, Travis, that Google's going to know you every which way. They're going to basically, unless you take some big effort here, they're going to know everything you do on the web. They're going to be able to track it six ways to Sunday, you know, sort of have you X-rayed. That's no problem to you. It's convenient.
Well, I mean, at least they're being upfront about it. There are plenty of sites that track information about you, and they're not upfront about it, so... I mean, yeah, if you're signing up to use the service, I don't see a problem with it.
When you were you're 23, when you were back, I don't know, in high school or college, something, did you ever read George Orwell, 1984, and all that? Do you connect the dots here to that, or that doesn't seem like a concern?
Not really. I think that's kind of an outdated notion of what people want to do with technology. I think that the younger generation, and that's a lot of who Google employs, obviously, They really see this technology and the potential in it for, I mean, really making people's lives more open. And the people that are, like I said, I mean, consent is an issue, I guess. But if you give people the choice, like Facebook, you don't have to use the apps to put all the info out there. So
yeah. Travis, I think you're telling it just like it is for an awful lot of people, and I appreciate your call on that front. Jeff Jarvis, in 1 second here, let me get one more. Thank you, Travis. Michael in Toronto. Michael, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
This is starting to sound like that terrific movie from a few years ago, Enemy of the State. Also, add 40 years to Travis's age, and you'll have mine.
Okay.
You can see
23 talks to 63. What do you think, Michael?
Well, you can see the generational divide. I'm absolutely terrified at the way this things are developing, and I agree with Mr. Rotenberg completely. Nothing you do on the computer is anonymous. That's what kids should be taught or have to realize.
But Travis seems to be very clear about that and not mind it.
Yeah, well, there again, you can see the. I don't know whether the generation hasn't been sensitized to this or not. Everything you do, every site you go to, that is fair game, I guess, as far as Google is concerned or wants to make it concerned.
Well, certainly within their world, and they've got some pretty strong cookies that can follow you even beyond that world. But is it worth it for the convenience, though? Get hit, Michael. This is going to. Turbocharge your life.
I was just going to say, with age comes wisdom.
Oh, but, forget hipness. We got wisdom going here. Bigger, trumped.
No, I'm really worried. I don't like the way this is going. And as I say, Travis doesn't seem worried in the slightest. I guess because he's grown up with it and he feels comfortable enough that he can handle himself. And, avoid some of the pitfalls but I don't know whether it would be that easy for everyone.
Michael, I appreciate your call. Who was it? Confucius, who said, live your life at every moment as though it's right out in public. And maybe now we will. Maybe now we will. Michael, thanks for your call. Stephen Levy, Mark Rotenberg, stand by. Joining us right now from New York is Jeff Jarvis. He runs the tech blog BuzzMachine.com, author of What Would Google Do? His new book is Public Parts, How Sharing in the Digital Age Improves the Way We Work and Live. Professor and director of the Tao Knight Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the City University of New York's Graduate School of Journalism. Jeff Jarvis, welcome back to One Point. Great to have you.
Thank you, Tom.
So here goes Google with a big new privacy policy. You say no big deal.
Yeah, I think this is a non-story, and I think you've fallen into a trap of some fear-mongering here, that every opportunity the kind of privacy industrial regulatory complex has to raise hackles and alarms that, oh, my God, our lives are gone. Let's get down to some reality here.
Okay.
Google provides services to us for free. They want to give us more relevance. Now, you can very easily, as Google points out, you don't have to sign into Google at all. You can kill all your cookies. You can use an incognito window.
Yeah.
But here's the experience you'll get then. When you ask for pizza, you won't get pizza near you. You'll get a Wikipedia entry on pizza. Google can give you the entry near you because it knows where you are. It may even know the kind of pizza you like, whatever. Let's examine what's the harm of that. How is your world going to fall apart because Google knows to give you pizza near you? This is a service you choose to use that you don't have to use.
That's our young listener
in Travis, a different way.
In Nashville, that's Travis's point. Make my life easier. Bring it on.
And I think it was Michael who was the next caller. I think is listening to this kind of drumbeat of fear about this that we hear in media. And frankly, this is part of it. I just came back from seeing a pilgrimage to the Gutenberg Museum in Germany.
Okay.
And I'm reminded that when new technologies come, change comes. And with change comes fear and comes a desire by some to resist it. But I think that we live in a great danger here, that if we try too hard to regulate this magnificent tool of publicness we have in the internet, a tool that Facebook will soon say 1 billion people are using to share with each other and connect with each other, a tool in Twitter and Facebook that people use to help them create revolutions, a tool that a mere hashtag on Twitter created Occupy Wall Street. These are incredible tools. And to try to define them only in the legacy of the past and to try to look only at the fear and only at the worst case, which is how this show's predicated, is, oh my God, privacy changes.
Hey, it's got a question mark. Let's keep it totally straight. We're asking.
Let's also have the conversation, though I haven't heard anything yet except from Stephen. There are great benefits to this. So we need to have a very rational, calm discussion about what's the actual harm of you being given a pizza ad.
We're asking all the way through about whether the conveniences outweigh what is a greater sort of exposition on the privacy.
Not just convenience, Tom. It's far more than convenience. This is a Gutenberg press in every hand.
Tell us about that. More than convenience. What does that mean? Like, take us out. Where does this really take us beyond just convenience of the pizza near me?
Well, I don't know yet. because we're at the very beginning of this. The change that we think is coming quickly, I think is coming actually very slowly. We're at the bare beginning of it. I'll go back to Gutenberg. John Naughton, who's a columnist on The Observer in London, asks us to imagine we're a pollster in 1472 in Mainz,
okay,
asking people, do you think this thing is going to cause the disruption of the Catholic Church, the Reformation, the Scientific Revolution, mm-hmm, a change of education, and all this? You think, nah. So I don't know where it goes, is the honest answer, Tom. But I think that we can look at very recent examples of how people have used these tools, that we want to leave them unregulated. The problem with SOPA was that it was an effort to change the architecture of the net.
Mm-hmm.
Vivian Reding, the vice president of the European Commission, mm-hmm, in Europe, just released a whole proposed slate of privacy regulations that I think EPIC would probably like most of them, that I find frightening because they're trying to change the architecture of the net around this fear and this non-specific view of possible harm, when what it's going to do is change the architecture of the net that people are using for the power to disrupt institutions such as government,
right,
such as media.
Right.
And so I think, again, the Arab Spring, Occupy Wall Street, things like that are small little beginning indicators of how this is more than just sharing what you have for breakfast.
This is about
a tool of people connecting with each other.
Yeah, it's a big list. We grant you that. And we're listening to that. Our ears are open. But you have to forgive us on the other side if we're really thinking about what it means for privacy at the same time. Though you remind
us,
Jeff.
Tom, all I'm asking you to do, we've had this conversation before, and I would ask you to also bring in the benefits of this tool and the dangers to the tool of premature regulation. That's where I'm concerned here.
That's why you're here, my friend. Remind us of your 1890 story about Kodak and the national parks.
So technology does bring in changes that cause, again, fear and disruption. And so when the Kodak camera was invented in 1890, President Teddy Roosevelt decreed that Kodaking was outlawed in parks. Now, this is very important to the discussion of privacy because it was in 1890 that Brandeis and Warren wrote the first major legal essay.
Why did he ban them, though, first? Why?
Why did he ban them? Because it was new and people were afraid their pictures were going to be taken and put in the penny press. Now, of course, we die for having our pictures taken.
Right, okay.
But and this was in a public place.
Yeah.
It's a technology change. What really is – here's the bigger question, Tom. What's really happening, forget the regulation, forget mm-hmm. the fear, is that we're trying to renegotiate our norms as a society.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to figure out how to connect with each other in a way that we will consider civilized and proper and true.
Yep.
So when the camera came out, people said, oh, my God, people can take a picture of me when I don't expect it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we figured out that,
park,
no, there are times.
By a grizzly bear, yeah.
Right. There are times when, yes, you're in public, somebody takes a picture, it's okay. If you're in private, people mm-hmm. ask. We negotiated our norms, so the camera is now a very friendly part of society, even as all of us have them on our phones.
Jeff, hold that thought right there. Mark Rotenberg, if you would. Look, the implication here is you're trying to hold back progress, evolution, technology. You're trying to hold back the Reformation with these concerns.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff is like deeply confused on a critical point here. There's a huge difference between talking about freedom of the Internet, which is something that I've done pretty much since the Internet became available to the public, and talking about the practices of a particular company that's collecting an extraordinary amount of personal information on individuals and actually threatening that freedom. And I think we really need to separate those two issues. There's a very big difference, for example, between the freedom that a person has to go online and express their views. Oftentimes, you know, they may be controversial, and a company deciding that it has the right to aggregate and to sell as much data on that individual as it can. And I think to have the conversation you want to have today,
mm-hmm.
you know, we need to focus on that second issue, because if we don't understand that second issue, that first value, which both Jeff and I are concerned about, actually will be lost. And we know this, in fact, already, because a lot of the data that's being gathered by companies like Google and Facebook becomes available to government agencies. We've just undertaken an open government lawsuit involving the social monitoring of networks by federal agencies here in Washington.
Mark Rotenberg, hold the thought there. We're up against a break. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about Google and Facebook and your privacy. The rules are changing. They say it's great for you. We're asking, is it? Stephen Levy's with us, senior writer with Wired magazine, author of In the Plex, How Google Thinks, Works, and Shapes Our Lives. Mark Rotenberg is here. He's executive director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center. They're still tussling over this. He says he hopes it never comes out that it may be illegal. Jeff Jarvis is with us, author of What Would Google Do? And Public Parts, his new book, How Sharing in the Digital Age Improves the Way We Work
and live. A lot of people joining us online. Yar says resistance is futile. You will be assimilated. Hugh says maybe listening to Travis in Nashville says don't trust anyone under 30. But Travis likes what he gets from Google and Facebook and their products. Jeff, Mark, Stephen, I'll come to you. Stephen, San Diego, California first. You're on the air, Stephen.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty well. What do you think?
Well, I had a scenario that I wanted to offer these guys. What if I'm talking to a friend through email, Gmail, and we're talking about something private, like, let's say, I don't know, adultery.
It's been done.
And I go into work later on, mm-hmm. and I log into Google, and up come some ads for divorce lawyers. Those are the kinds of things I'm worried about. We don't know what they're going to do with this data. Who are they going to give it to? How deeply are they going to look into our data?
Let me pick that one up. Stephen Levy, is that a realistic possibility? You have an email exchange or a few of them about adultery. You're going to get ads for divorce lawyers? Is it possible?
I hope Google, you know, would be sensitive to things like that. But in theory, you know, that's not out of the question there. I think that if you look at the behavior of Google and Facebook there, I think that one problem that I see is they're being very aggressive about saying, here's our vision for what you're going to like,
yep.
and we're going to be aggressive about pushing that. I actually think that it would be to both companies' benefits if they were able to give us this trade-off, you know, can basically say, okay, if you want to turn this on, here's mm-hmm. the good stuff that will happen.
Right.
Why don't you try it out and see if these benefits are actually worth our making use of this information.
Yeah, but you do that and immediately Facebook isn't worth $100 billion. It's worth 50 or 20. I mean, it's based.
Well, I mean,
they're
worth a lot without making everyone do the timeline, right? So, you know, my feeling is that I'm sort of between Mark and Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we should be really well informed about where these trade-offs are, what we're getting in order for these places to have our information. And I think we should be able to really very easily set the slider for how private we want to be there.
That would be awesome, but it's not the deal. I mean, it's not their business
model.
Well,
no, to a certain degree, it is the deal, because if people really don't like it, they're going to abandon these companies there, and people talk about it there. You know, we talk about Facebook and Google, like, you know, they're there forever. But at one point, people thought that AOL was, you know, really, you know, had everything
right,
locked in,
right.
And the internet is AOL there.
Yeah.
MySpace had many, many more users than Facebook.
But the bigger and, you know, they get, the harder to abandon. But I take your point. Lori in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Lori, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to say hi to Stephen. Longtime fan since Hackers.
All right.
Oh, thank you.
Fan in Pittsburgh. What do you think, Lori?
Okay, I'm a longtime Facebook and Google person, and normally I like them. Timeline is okay. It's easy to remove stuff from Timeline. I think people are overly worried about it.
Okay.
I have a much bigger issue with Google, and that's because, like every woman friend of mine, Google has decided we are men, and we'd rather not be men.
What do you mean it's decided you're men? You got a woman's name, Lori.
Yes, okay. They have this thing now to see, Google makes a bunch of assumptions about you based on your searches. They make assumptions about your gender.
Yep.
They make assumptions about your age. And they're usually pretty close on age, but they miss gender completely because I guess they have some software set up to say, if this person is looking for cosmetics and shoes and food and childcare, obviously this is a woman.
Okay.
And if it's somebody looking up cars and science fiction and astronomy, it's obviously a man.
So they've got you pegged as a man. Okay.
Yes. All of my woman friends are now male, according to Google.
So what's the big deal? Is it just that you're not getting the service you'd like? That's not an invasion of privacy. It's just a sort of misapprehension of who you are.
Okay. But here's the problem. Say that you're Google and you're selling your assumptions about people, and your assumptions about people are often wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's my issue. Basically, to some degree, Google. Now, what Google could do, for example, is they could say, they could give everybody the option, say, opt in. Okay, say that you're this, you know, you're in this age group, you're this gender, you live in this area.
Yep.
That way, you know, and they certainly have the capability for that rather than making wrong right. assumptions.
Yeah, Google actually does have this thing called a dashboard and, you know, an ad center where you can tweak these things. You could say, you know, don't show me stuff about cars, show me cosmetics or whatever. Very few people take advantage of these tools, but if it really bugs you, you know, you might be motivated enough to, you know, go down and click those buttons and change your settings.
But of course, you can say whatever you want, Lori. They're still going to be tracking and making their own assumptions about you, which they're selling and using. Let me get one more, and I'll take it on here. Barbara in Narragansett, Rhode Island. Barbara, you're on the air.
Hi, good show. I have type 2 diabetes, and
okay.
when I first got it a couple of years ago, naturally I went to Google and was looking all over the place for
sure.
information.
Mm-hmm.
That's all information. And it kept coming back at me through Google. So,
what do you mean, coming back at you?
Well, ads for different things relating to type 2 diabetes.
So they clearly have you pegged as a diabetes sufferer, most
right.
likely.
Which really annoys me. So what I've done is made it my business. Every week I enter a new disease, and I start searching.
Oh, no.
You know, like the Ebola one week, and I really, just to confuse Google.
So can I ask a question? What was the
was.
Problem?
Yeah,
what was the problem,
Jeff
though?
Jarvis wants to know, what's the problem with them knowing you've got diabetes and trying
if,
to
if
get
you got more relevant ads that might have actually given you something or more relevant content,
well, no,
what
I
was
I
your fear?
I don't need people to know. I just wanted some information
no
for
person knows.
Myself.
No person knows.
Myself.
But no person knows.
I sometimes right, look at Lamborghinis or baby changing things or Fisher Price, but I am not. I'm put out the wrong information purposely because they are tracking my every move.
They're going to think you're a real wreck with Ebola and all that. But Jeff, you know, I mean, you say nobody knows, but I mean, our San Diego caller says, you know, you go to the office and you turn your machine on, and there's all the ads for divorce lawyers. Anybody looking over Barbara's shoulder is going to see ads for, you know, to take your blood sugar level. I mean,
Tom, back in the day,
yeah?
back in the day when I gave to NPR stations,
you've stopped.
Suddenly,
don't stop.
Suddenly out of nowhere, I would be getting, you know, mail for all kinds of other related causes. How did that happen? Because NPR sold my name and the fact that I gave money to them with my address to others.
Well, I'm sorry
when
for
I
that, but isn't that
kid Weekly,
stuff compared to this?
When
and
I, no, not at all. It's far more personally identifiable than ever. When I started Entertainment Weekly magazine,
yeah.
we sold your name and address and what you read. There are databases that were built far before the Internet that had far more personally identifiable information than these have now. The Internet is far more anonymized as a rule. We have to get to a discussion of
Jeff,
real harm because
oh,
I disagree with Mark.
Jeff,
I disagree. Let me finish. Mark, let me answer you. Mark, may I answer you from before?
One second.
But what you said is not true. I mean,
Mark, may I answer you from before?
Because of the Google announcement.
Mark, may I answer you from before?
Finish up,
please?
Jeff, and we'll take it to Mark. Yes, Jeff, the rounder out there.
Because what Mark was saying was we have to separate these two conversations. I disagree very, very strongly because where he's headed, where the FTC and the EU are headed, is to regulate the net in a way that will have an impact on the freedom of this tool. We cannot separate the conversations and have it just one based on fear and worst-case analysis and fear-mongering that some of these organizations are doing. We must also have the conversation about the impact that what they do will have on freedom, an impact that comes out of nonspecific harm and vague creepy. And that's no way to regulate this incredibly powerful tool.
Point taken.
Don't regulate the
privacy
technology.
Has been understood as part of freedom. But let's say, point taken. Mark Rotenberg, your view there?
Well, first of all, no one's talking about regulating the Internet. And Jeff,
oh, they sure are.
Stop talking.
Oh, yeah, but that. They are.
We're talking about holding companies accountable that are.
What did you do with the FTC, Mark?
Jeff, give me
you regulated
my word,
the
okay?
net.
Hang on. Yeah, Mark.
We are talking about holding companies accountable that are collecting and
through
using
regulation.
Personal information of Internet users. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And for you to say that the Internet is moving toward greater anonymity the same week that Google is announcing that it's planning to consolidate all of its user-identified services is frankly absurd.
Well, how is it not
you're
anonymous, Mark?
You mirror, buddy.
Isn't it still anonymous? I mean, does it have your name?
It's not anonymous.
Well, I thought a lot of Google stuff was serving you ads, but they weren't. They didn't know. They
you
weren't saying
sign,
who you,
you
were.
You don't have to sign into Google. You don't have to sign into Google.
But that's the key point, of course. In other words, to maintain your anonymity, and now you're making my argument for me, Jeff. To maintain your anonymity, you're going to have to stop using Google services. That's the entire point of the announcement. And that's why it's very important that we be clear about what this discussion is about. It is very much about the freedom of Internet users. And the freedom of Internet users means that we have to start holding these companies accountable. these companies can't pretend that it's their freedom that's at issue when we try
But they do, too. They also have freedom. They are giving you a free service, and this is the business deal that they present.
Yeah, but it gets pretty deeply embedded in our lives. We got
the New York Times requires you to accept cookies.
Yeah, Mark, I want to ask you this. What about, Jeff raises the mail order era precedent here? People have been selling, you know, lists of people interested in trout fishing or you name it.
I've been at, you know, these privacy issues for a very long time, mm-hmm. and I can tell you that the threats today to personal privacy from companies like Google and Facebook are far greater than they were from direct marketers 30 years ago because the companies collect far
strongly.
More information, not just about purchase, but about your interests, about your likes and your dislikes.
Yeah, well, it's certainly more information. I mean, you can't argue with it. Charlie in Bedford, Massachusetts. Charlie, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Google provides a free service. I was just starting out a new business, and without the free services with email, Google Documents, AdWords, AdSense, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing now as a new business. I would have to pay firms thousands and thousands of dollars for what Google offers me for free.
So you're here to stick up for Google. What about the privacy issue? Is it? Do you care about it or not?
I know what I'm getting into when I sign up for Google. I think there are millions and millions of users should know what they're signing up for.
Can you really live these days without Google? Or would that be, aren't you kind of leveraged into Google just because of its ubiquity on the web? Do you really have a choice not to touch Google?
Well, if Google, I remember a few years ago, it was Yahoo. And everything was on Yahoo. Now everything's on Google.
Yeah.
If I lost Google, if I woke up tomorrow and Google was not here, I would be in trouble for about a week and then somebody would take their place.
Yeah, there's the point.
Which is how that forces Google to behave well, because if they mess with us, there are alternatives for every service they offer, and they're aware of that.
And they know it. Charlie, thank you. Kate in Cranston, Rhode Island. Kate, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I have a couple of concerns. One is, the lack of privacy being used against us somewhere further down the line by the Patriot Act, for instance. You know, you've gone to a demonstration, you supported some cause, and then that comes back to bite you.
Mm-hmm.
And my second one is that the I really go to great lengths to avoid advertising. That's why I listen to public radio.
Okay.
And so when you're being bombarded by the people who can afford to advertise, so your choices are actually really limited by those people who can afford the advertisement.
But I mean, that is kind of the system we live in. It's hard to expect that it won't be that way in this country, in our economy, isn't it?
But I don't like it. You know, I'm somebody who really appreciates the hardware store around the corner. And I'm not going to get an ad for the hardware store around the corner.
Actually, you might now, because the one thing this personalization does, and this is the way both Google and Facebook and many, many other companies are saying that they can do now, is they could deliver these local ads to you. And, you know, their argument is they're going to be more meaningful to you.
Kate, they might at least get local with you, but we get it. This whole ad-floated structure may not be your favorite. Stephen Levy, though, what about Kate's point? You know, she's worried about all this information somehow getting in
suddenly
your target under the Patriot Act. Yeah. You know, the government
It's a real concern to put information out of our control and put it in the control of companies that must comply with these government demands. And sometimes and Google says they won't do this, will hand over information even without a subpoena. You know, we've had problems with people giving phone records out without subpoenas,
mm-hmm.
and things like that. It's just a concern of our age, and it's going to be a bigger concern as more and more of our information lives outside of our direct control into what's known as the cloud.
Hey, Jeff Jarvis, you know, I use a lot of these services online, and I enjoy a lot of them. And like you, I'm excited by a lot of the things that have been made possible here. On the other hand, boy, you go onto Facebook and look down that timeline, and it's for all the world like in the old movies of an FBI dossier, you know, or something put together by a private detective. Here he is at this place. Here he is at that place. Here's what
he
said on this date,
Tom,
at this time.
But you put it there, Tom. You chose to share.
Well, yeah,
you
but I live my life, right? Too. But, I mean, yeah, I leave footprints in the sand, too. But that doesn't mean
the basic – well, but you put it there. There are 800 million people, soon a billion people, who are putting things on Facebook. They're choosing to share for a reason. They're not all drunk. And you know what?
But here's they're not choosing to share
Tom,
yeah, okay.
Let me give you the basic
rule
of life.
Yeah.
If you have a secret, don't put it on the internet. It's a rotten place for secrets. And by the way, let me also back up what Stephen is saying.
Yeah.
Government is by far the greater threat to privacy and to our freedoms.
What's the line between them? How do we know that it won't be given up when the FBI comes knocking? They don't even have to knock. They can just go on Facebook and look at it.
But it's the stuff that you put there. Right? It's the same lesson you learned when you were in third grade and you told someone on the playground a secret, and the next thing you know, it was all around the lunch table. There wasn't a problem of technology there. There was a problem of you having a gossipy, rude friend.
But I've had the presumption that I could live part of my life, put my life into the world, and not have it all be fodder for everybody all the time. Mark Rotenberg, are you going to stop this thing, Mark, or is it going through?
We're certainly going to try to, and I just want to say, you know, there's something else that you learn when you're young, and that is that you're supposed to honor your commitments. And Google and Facebook both made commitments to users, made commitments to the Federal Trade Commission about what they would and would not do. And they've now broken those commitments. They're telling their users, even though they may have had a privacy promise in the past, they have the right to change it, and they're not going to let their users, you know, opt into the change. That's simply wrong. That's ethically wrong, and it's legally wrong. And it's the reason I think they're going to have to ultimately back off.
May, we'll see. March 1st is just around the corner. It's coming on like gangbusters. They're big, and this may be the way of the future, whatever the legalities, the niceties. Interesting, fascinating. Mark Rotenberg with the Electronic Privacy Information Center. We appreciate your being with us, Mark. Thanks so much. Jeff Jarvis, author of Public Parts, How Sharing in the Digital Age Improves the Way We Work and Live. Jeff, point taken. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
And Stephen Levy with Wired Magazine, author of In the Plex. Stephen, you're great. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom. I love it.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.